details in his State of the Union address to Americans tonight. Aid agencies have struggled to get supplies to hungry civilians there, and talks about a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas conflict have stalled. Here's Foreign Secretary Lord Cameron.
We need to see more types of aid get in. We need to see the number of trucks go up. We need to see more UN staff with visas inside Gaza so they can move the aid around.
The UK is to supply more than 10,000 drones to Ukraine. It's part of an extra £125 million funding package for its war with Russia. Scotland's Justice Secretary has ordered a public inquiry into the way police investigated the murder of Emma Caldwell in Glasgow. Her killer, Ian Packer, evaded justice for nearly 20 years before he was jailed last week for at least 36 years. Red Bull Formula One team boss Christian Horner says a line should be drawn under accusations of inappropriate behaviour levelled against him after the female colleague who made the claims was suspended. An internal investigation cleared him of any wrongdoing last week. The post office says it won't object to giving up its involvement in compensation schemes linked to the Horizon IT scandal. It's after the Business and Trade Committee published recommendations for delivering cash to victims, describing efforts so far as an abject failure. Former sub-postmaster Vijay Parekh was wrongly jailed for fraud and has only received an interim payment.
We've been saying this a long time, that it needs an independent body, because these barristers who are dealing on the post office side are only going to be in their own favour of giving a minimum amount of compensation to the postmasters.
Football, and Liverpool are currently leading 1-0 in the first leg of their Europa League round of 16 tie against Sparta Prague. Roma lead 1-0 against Brighton. That's the latest. I'm Tim Jones.
This is Phoenix FM.
Weather on Phoenix FM, proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
Well, for the first time in a few Thursdays, it's fairly calm out there. Tonight we'll see areas of thicker low cloud moving for most people. It should be generally dry, but there may be some patchy drizzle, which cannot be ruled out. There will still be a few clear spells. It will be a breezy night. Lows of 4 degrees Celsius. Into tomorrow, and it will see a low cloud to start with, but this will soon break up to reveal some sunshine. Areas of cloud will still move in from the southeast at times. A mild and breezy day with highs of 8 degrees. Sunrise at 6:27. And sunset at 5:52.
Weather on Phoenix FM. Sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company. Proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit sehbac.com for help with your home.
Phoenix FM Travel News.
Right, just looking around the local area. In Chelmsford, there is slow-moving traffic on a parkway between the High Bridge, that's the A1099, and the Army and Navy roundabout. There's slow-moving traffic on Victoria Road between Springfield Road and New Street. It's slow-moving on the Baddow Bypass, that's the A1114. That's heading towards the Army and Navy roundabout. Over in Thundersley, it's slow approaching the Dawes Heath mini roundabout. And on public transport, good service on all tube lines. And Greater Anglia and C2C also reporting no problems this evening. There'll be more traffic in the Breakfast Show with Mikey tomorrow morning from 7. Well, my thanks to Jo for Drive. She's had a really packed week, and it continues tomorrow. She's back at 3 o'clock. From now until 7 p.m, it's me, Darren Mutu, Cricket 98, and not out.
On 98 FM and online, this is Phoenix FM.
Cricket, lovely cricket.
Welcome along to everyone. Hey, you've had a good week. Did you get up early enough this morning to watch England? Did you wish you'd gone back to bed? Or stayed in bed? We'll be talking about that in the show. Thanks for all the feedback from last week's show with Dan Hagger. Evening, Dan. If you missed it, you can find it on the phoenixfm.com website or on the podcast. We just outlined what's going on at Essex and their plans for the future of the ground. Do they stay there and redevelop, or do they move? A hot topic amongst Essex members at the moment. Also, tonight my special guest is Tim Brooks. He's written a cracking novel called The Batmaker of Copenhagen, set in World War II Denmark. It's a story about a man trying to preserve the future of his cricket club. Yes, cricket in Denmark, in the war. Very, very good read. I'll be talking to Tim later on. Talking in a different style. And you are listening to Phoenix FM 98 on the FM dial in the central Essex area. You can listen via the internet. Head to phoenixfm.com. Click on Listen Live. Or if you have to go out, you've got things to do, you can download the show later on this evening. Go to that very same website, phoenixfm.com. Look under programs or just search for 98 Not Out. And in fact, every single show is on there for you to listen back. Other ways to listen as well, you can go to Mixcloud. Or you can just shout at your smart speaker to play a Phoenix FM. And of course, we always like your feedback. If you want to take part in the show with any thoughts, comments or suggestions, email radio@phoenixfm.com. Title your mail 98 Not Out. I did have someone email the other week. Why is it called 98 Not Out? Thinking it was referenced to all kinds of cricket scores. But it's actually to do with the fact that Phoenix is 98 FM. And that's how we fell upon the name. And you can also message via social media. Look for 98 Not Out on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Make sure you give it a like and a follow. And you can get in touch that way. And don't forget the podcast as well. We are there on the podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, look for 98 Not Out. And you get abridged versions of the show, the interviews, the chats and all the rest of it. It's good stuff. It's cricket birthdays of the week. Inzamam Haq leads the list, turns 54 this week. Andile Felukweyo of South Africa, 28. Jade Dernbach, 38. Essex's Jamal Richards is 20 and Charlie Allison is 19. Kevin O'Brien hits double top, 40. Daryl Cullinan, 57. Former Essex and England coach Chris Silverwood, 49. Aussie terror Rodney Hogg, 73. Tom Abel, 30. Edo Brandes, 61. Kieran Powell, 34. King Viv is 72 today. Luke Wright, 39. Nonwebo Tsotsobe is 40, as is Ross Taylor. Phil Edmonds is 73. Izzy Westbury, 34. Mohamed Shami's 34. And Samuel Badri is 43. And Phoenix FM's very own Michelle Ward is celebrating a birthday today as well. As always, if you want to be part of the Cricket Birthdays of the Week list, email me, radio@phoenixfm.com. Title your mail, 98 Not Out Birthdays. Let me know who it is and a little bit about them. And I shall add them to the list.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Lots going on. I'm just working out what to prioritise on tonight's show. Well, I've just been prodded. The Phoenix FM newsletter. Have you subscribed? You should do. It's free. Details are on the phoenixfm.com homepage. And that you'll get a regular newsletter just updating on what's going on, the guests that we've had, new music, etc., events, everything going on in the area and everything related to the radio station. So make sure that you subscribe to the newsletter.
The March edition of County Cricket Matters is now out. It has an interview with James New of Somerset. It also has articles by a wonderful writer, David Woodhouse, and articles by Alan Wilkins. Lots more. And of course, there's a crossword. Subscribe. It's a fantastic bargain at your hand.
Oh, that was a bit drowned out there. That was Annie Chave mentioning the new edition, the March edition of County Cricket Matters is out. It's £3.50. Subscribe to it. Make sure you do. It's really, really good, especially if you love county cricket. You should be taking part in that. £3.50. It's an absolute bargain.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
All right, I should talk about England. I can't hold it back any longer. They are just started the final test against India in the early hours of this morning. It's a dead rubber, really. India are 3-1 up heading into this test match, with notables events. Johnny Bairstow and Ashwin are both playing in their 100th test match. Now, after a promising start with Zach Crawley, who's born again in the last 18 months. After a promising start with Zach Crawley and Ben Duckett putting on 64 for the first wicket, dismal England slumped 175 for 3 to 183 for 8 before being bowled out for 218. It was a good batting service. England won the toss and just got a bat. And you would have thought that it was a chance to put some runs on the board. But all 10 England wickets fell to spin. Left armour Kuldeep bewitched England, taking 5 for 72, while Ravi Ashwin marked his 100th test with 4 for 51. England's captain Ben Stokes was out for a duck. England's batting coach Marcus Trescothick said on TNT, I keep wanting to call it BT, it's not anymore, is it? TNT Sports, he said, "Yes, a challenging day. We had some good moments and we batted well up until lunch when the ball was swinging around and nipped around more than we expected it to. Zach Crawley batted very well to get his score, but we just didn't get enough partnerships together in the middle to put a decent total on the board. Winning the toss was important for us, but it is what it is. We've got to come back better tomorrow. There are ways we can do better, and we'll look to do that tomorrow. It moved around a lot more than we expected it to with the swing and when we started this morning. But our challenge now is that the ball is 30 overs old, so hopefully there will be some dew around in the morning when it's colder, and that may be able to help us." Now, over on TalkSport, Steve Harmson, who's been quite scathing since the preparation for this tour, said England needed to be smarter. And he made a very good point, I thought, that given that India are 3-1 up going into this, a 3-2 series defeat would be better than a 4-1 result, if only in terms of World Test Championship points. So it could be coming down to that, but let's hope England get some early wickets tomorrow and make a game of this. Let's hope they bowl India out cheaply, get a decent second innings total, and then set them a target for the next inning.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
All right, time for a bit of music. This is Bush and Swallowed.
Feed me up, Mary, load it up, loathing for a change, and I slip some boil away. Everything but my love. Swallowed.
about to try some. Hey, you said you would love to die some. In the middle of a world on a fish hook, you're the wave, you're the wave, you're the wave. Swallowed, borrowed, heavy about everything but my love. Swallowed, hollowed, shoveled about everyone but yourself.
It's Phoenix 98 FM.
That's Bush and Swallowed. Great record, that one. Absolutely superb. Back from the mid-90s, I think, 95, 96.
Hello to Darren and the listeners of 98 Not Out. Just to let you know that the March issue of the Cricketer magazine is out now, and the centrepiece is a superb deep dive by Sam Morshead into county finances. We also have Monty Panesar writing about his favourite cricketer, Sachin Tendulkar. And making up the lineup is David Gower, Mike Brearley, Nasser Hussain, George DeBell, Kieran Pollard and Tanya Aldred. That's the March issue of the Cricketer magazine, out now.
Excellent publication. Make sure you subscribe to that. And thanks to Hugh for putting that together for us. Right, time for my guest this evening. Now, Tim Brooks, you probably maybe might have heard of, maybe you haven't. But he's written a really good book, which is coming out on April the 1st. Pre-order your copy. I'll put the link on the website. It's called The Batmaker of Copenhagen. So let's just find out all about it. Today, my guest is a really, really interesting one. You might not have heard of him. Author of The Batmaker of Copenhagen, Mr. Tim Brooks. Tim, very good to have you along, sir.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me. Looking forward to our chat.
So first of all, a little bit about you. So a bit like me, you tried admirably on the field and didn't get as good as some of the other people around you. So you channeled your love of the game into writing, and you started off. You've contributed to fairly esteemed organisations. Wisden that you've written for and others.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, really, how it came about was I was kind of naturally intrigued, as I think a lot of cricket fans are, about you know, the many cricket teams that play across the world that you hear a bit less about. So you might say that was, you know, underneath test level. And it always was odd to me that you heard about, in football, loads and loads of teams, and yet in cricket, you know, all of the discussion was on kind of Australia and England and India and a few others. And at the time, which we're talking about kind of early noughties, I suppose, there was really very little coverage of kind of non-test nations. It's improved a bit since, but it was definitely a bit of a gap in the market. And I thought, well, maybe that's something that I can, you know, kind of add some value on. And I started to focus on that, and it kind of snowballed a bit from there.
You did a bit of commentary as well, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. So, interestingly, I was just starting to write for Wisden, and I'd gone out to Dubai to cover a T20 global qualifier. And while I was out there, there was a kind of live streaming team, and I got invited on as a guest. And then an hour later, I was the lead commentator for the rest of the tournament.
Wow.
And then we went on to, this is QTV Sports, which is still in operation, and we went on to cover a lot of ODI and T20 cricket associate level. There was a few highlights in that. So I don't know if you remember, but there was a tied ODI between Pakistan and Ireland, in Ireland, where Ed Joyce made 100. And we also covered a Netherlands-Bangladesh game, which the Netherlands won. And then in between that, yeah, quite a lot of a kind of associate nation level cricket. Also did a bit of last man stands and a few other bits and bobs. And that was, yeah, a really interesting period. I kind of scaled that down a bit when I started a family. But, yeah, very interesting few years doing commentary.
Yeah, kids change your direction a little bit, don't they? It's interesting, your involvement in the non-test aspect of the game. It is quite amazing when you start digging down into that area of just how many nations play cricket, whether it's through expats. And in certain circumstances, if you go a bit further back before there was a kind of a real movement of labour across the world, how the game established itself in various corners. It wasn't just about the British Empire and colonialism. It did pop up in some unexpected places. Now, Denmark being one of them. Do you want to just tell us, before we get into the book, and it's there's an excellent piece at the end of the book in the historical notes, which explains how cricket took a foothold in Denmark. Do you want to just explain to us how it came about?
Yeah, so it was an interesting one because it was a British influence, but not in the kind of normal kind of empire context. So the first kind of cricket was played by English railway engineers that went up. Denmark went through the Industrial Revolution a bit later in the mid-19th century, and they looked to kind of England's expertise on railways, and they played some games while they were over there, including some with the locals. But the more significant kind of channel was through upper-class Danes who went to English public schools and brought their kind of love of the game back with them from there. They, I guess because of their class and influence, they were able to hold quite a lot of sway with kind of Danish government. And they definitely had a kind of mission, not just to introduce cricket, but to introduce kind of cricket's values. And yeah, I think I talk a bit in that annex around how, you know, there was a few decades in the late 19th century before football had really started developing as a structured sport on the continent, where, you know, cricket had an opportunity to be the major game in continental Europe, and ultimately missed that opportunity. But the first games were played, the first club games were played in 1866, so it has a very long heritage in Denmark, as it does in the Netherlands as well.
And just reading through those notes, it does seem that cricket wasn't a million miles away from some of the local Danish traditional sports that we've been playing out there with bat and ball.
Yeah, that's right. So there was a game that was, I guess, the equivalent to rounders, which was called Langbold, and that was there was also a Norwegian game called Knat, which was similar, bat and ball sport, essentially. So I think what they did, the kind of pioneers of cricket in Denmark, what they did is they took that kind of innate interest in the pre-existing sport, particularly the kind of thrill of hitting a ball a long way, and then they kind of layered on the kind of strategic nuance of cricket, you know, which is a major reason why it captures the imagination of many people across the world. So that definitely helped establish it in Denmark, where it didn't in other countries in continental Europe.
And down the years, I mean, even stretching back to the Victorian times, there have been notable players, and even coming up to the sort of almost modern times, there is a rich history of talented Danish cricketers.
Yeah, I think the best known is probably Ole Mortensen, who's kind of a Derbyshire legend. I think he got 430-odd first-class wickets. And he's also quite an eccentric character as well. So he'll be particularly well-known. There were a handful of others as well, and I think most recently, a good friend of mine, actually, Freddie Clocker, who played for a couple of counties, made a couple of first-class hundreds, and was captain of Denmark for a long time. Unfortunately, didn't secure a long-term county contract, but so definitely a handful. It's quite an interesting link across to Irish cricket now as well, because Jeremy Bray, who people may remember was a kind of Irish international, was the coach of Denmark for a while, and some Danes have been playing first-class cricket over in Ireland. So there's still that kind of connection there. We're probably past the heyday of Danish cricket, unfortunately. They're in a kind of rebuilding phase at the moment. But they're still, you know, in the major ICC global tournaments. So they're definitely one of the teams that I follow closely.
Yeah, absolutely. So the bat maker of Copenhagen is out April the 1st, is it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, but you can pre-order it on Amazon. So anyone listening to this or watching this should definitely do that. I was lucky enough to be given a copy, an advanced copy, by your good self. And I whittled it off in a couple of days. Absolutely superb read. And I'm not saying that because you're here. I found it really interesting on a number of levels, which we'll sort of go through maybe bit by bit. But the overall thing, it's a thriller set in, obviously, in Copenhagen during World War II, with cricket as a backdrop. It got me thinking, you know, in terms of writing something like this, you're faced with lots and lots of challenges. Let's start with the period of it. So it's when the Nazis have taken over, they're sort of marching through Denmark, and the story is about a local cricket club on the brink of disappearing because of lack of equipment. And the story is about how they ultimately survive. So first, let me just ask you, how hard was it to write about something in Denmark during the war?
Yeah, good question. So I'm a kind of historian by, you know, I've got a history degree and I've got a strong interest in history, so that helped. I think one of the interesting things about the resistance in Denmark is that it's kind of less well known than maybe the French resistance or the Dutch resistance, where there's a lot more kind of films and books. So it took quite a lot of research, and it was a slightly different situation in Denmark, because until 1943 at least, you know, the Danish government stayed in place, albeit in a bit of a puppet government way. And there was kind of less overt signs of Nazi control. But the book starts at quite a pivotal point where the kind of resistance networks have grown in confidence, and the kind of hostilities are starting to escalate. So I did a lot of research on the different resistance groups, and also the link back to England. So as you can imagine, the British were quite keen on supporting the resistance groups because it was a way of kind of undermining the German war effort from within. And so I thought that was quite an interesting kind of triangular relationship to look at, the kind of resistance, the what the Nazis were doing and how that was different to other occupied territories, and then how the British were kind of supporting the Danish resistance effort at quite a key juncture in the war. So, yeah, quite a lot of research into that aspect. And then also obviously trying to then combine what is quite a kind of personal story about the individual who's the hero of the book, I suppose, with that broader picture of the war and Denmark trying to win back its freedom, I guess.
Yeah, it starts off with a scene that any cricket lover would recognise straight away, that the climax of a game and the sort of return to the clubhouse and the shutting down of the closing of the scoring book and everyone disappearing off. Even though it's in wartime Denmark, it could be anywhere in this country at a club sort of late in the season. It's very, very typical of how cricket is fairly uniform wherever it's being played.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to sort of take the reader on that journey from kind of universal themes that they would recognise into a very particular, specific context in Denmark, and take the reader also on a journey of understanding what Danish cricket was like at that stage, partly because you have to know that in order to kind of make sense of this slightly mad, very brave journey that this individual goes on. In the book.
Yeah, and to me, the cricket club is kind of like a microcosm for what's happening in Denmark in terms of trying to preserve or trying to survive against the threat of oblivion under Nazi Germany. And that the sort of the pretext of it, and really, I suppose, where the journey that our hero is on is to, well, that's why he's called a bat maker. He wants to find willow and materials to make cricket bats, which takes him on quite a risky expedition. I won't give away the ending of the book, but it's interesting that in doing so, he falls under the suspicion of the Gestapo for maybe being up to something that's a lot more sinister when maybe it isn't.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted an element of the book to be a duel between two individuals, and you get that with the Batmaker and the Gestapo chief. So the Gestapo chief is almost looking for a worthy adversary.
Yeah.
And he kind of almost mistakenly finds one in the, the Batmaker. And, you know, to some extent that becomes his kind of Achilles heel. And that's kind of the second half of the book. It kind of explains why. Whereas actually the Batmaker himself is on quite a personal quest to protect the game that he loves, and he's the sort of person that would not get involved in the war and would try and kind of get through the war unscathed. But yeah, he's the kind of individual that would probably try and lay low, but because of his passion for cricket, it kind of draws him out into you know, hero status. He's almost an unlikely hero.
Yeah. And the pace picks up quite quickly. What starts off as a gentle portrait of a cricket club at the on the last game at the end of a season, you turn the pace quite nicely into becoming this sort of cat and mouse thriller, where Frederick's being chased through Copenhagen, through Denmark, and beyond. I really like the way that you managed to write it so that it happened that way, and the pictures you paint of, I mean, to me, it's very, very evocative because the writing is good. That you know, you can. I've never been to. Actually, no, I have been to Copenhagen, but not wartime Copenhagen. But your writing paints a really good picture of how it might have looked at the time, and certainly how it felt under the shadow of the Nazis. How did you? I know you said you studied history, but there were any other sort of things that you drew on to sort of paint this picture of jazz clubs and you know, sort of dark, dimly lit streets, etc., etc.?
Well, I have been like an avid reader of spy thrillers, I guess. So maybe I thought through osmosis, I kind of picked up some of that. But what I was sort of trying to get across was, which is not necessarily easy for an English reader in particular, because we obviously weren't in that situation, about having your kind of freedom curtailed and how much anxiety that would cause on a kind of day-to-day basis, you know, not knowing whether you were going to be kind of, you know, searched at a roadblock, not knowing if you were going to be kind of picked up in the middle of the night under suspicion of being, you know, a resistance fighter. And that kind of sense of anxiety, but also the sense of belief in something, almost the equivalent of the Blitz spirit, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I wanted to try and kind of get that across as well. And, you know, there are some scenes in the book where, you know, you do see the brutality of the Nazi regime, you know, being enacted, but also some quite audacious fight back from the resistance, who went from, in the earlier part of the war, being quite tentative to actually really putting their lives on the line to hit the Nazis where it hurt by the time that the book was set. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, that kind of context, you know, comes across, and you can kind of, you know, feel that kind of claustrophobic atmosphere that was, you know, in Copenhagen at the time.
Yeah, definitely. And, yeah, I like the... It's kind of like it's almost like you pull back a cover on the city with the resistance and how it's working underground in the shadow, and the amount of risk taking that goes on where people are trying to all achieve the same ends in slightly parallel ways, but they're all aiming in the same direction. And yeah, it's amazing. And my particular favourite passage of the book is at the woodcutter's hut. Where he meets what he thinks is a surly character, and they end up forming quite a close bond.
Yeah, I one element of it which I was trying to get across, and this was quite challenging, was almost the spiritual, almost spiritual process for him of making the bat itself, and how he kind of sort of translated his kind of passion into this kind of craft. And when he meets, yeah, that other character in the hut, he was someone who kind of shared that kind of love of wood and love of craft. And then he almost found a bit of a kind of soulmate there that could go along that part of the journey with him. Because, you know, he is worried about whether he can actually achieve this thing he set out to do, whether it's going to work or not. He's definitely not assured from the beginning. And he has a few kind of wrong turns along the way, but he has some kind of allies, if you like, that help him get there.
That's right. And without giving it away, it's all got a very uplifting ending. And I quite like the fact that you've put on a sort of a historical notes bit at the end, just to give a bit of backdrop and context to the subject matter, which really is a nice sort of bit to read. Because sometimes you read a book and you're a bit deflated afterwards. But that is something that's quite nice to just sort of, after you've turned the last page, just have a look through a few pages of that, just to give you just a little bit more background colour to what you've just read.
Yeah, I was trying to get across that, you know, although cricket is not, you know, the number one sport in Denmark, it does have a long history and it does have a long culture, and it does matter to a lot of people. I think this is one of the points that people maybe don't quite get. You know, quite often in cricket writing, you see references to cricket being played in odd places across the world. In almost, and people almost kind of laughing at the strangeness of it. You know, and that's fair enough. But I think when you actually meet cricket communities in countries where cricket is more of a minority sport, you know, you cannot question the kind of passion and commitment, because these people are, you know, protecting a game which is always under threat. And I think we probably take it for granted in England, although we've got our own existential crisis around Test cricket and county cricket. Nevertheless, it is a well-established game, and there are, you know, cricket grounds everywhere you go. That is not the case in a lot of these other countries. And, you know, the zeal and the passion of cricket communities in these other countries is really inspiring, actually.
Well, it's a brilliant book. I really thoroughly enjoyed reading it. I would suggest everyone that is a follower of this programme gets out there, and you can pre-order it now on all of your, wherever you go, Amazon, etc., or even just get down to a proper bookshop and tell the man behind the counter you want a copy of The Batmaker of Copenhagen by Tim Brooks. It's published by Fish Publishing, I believe, and is available to pre-order now and out on the shelves on the 1st of April. Tim, I'm off to go and make myself some nettle tea. I don't know what you're doing now.
Some dinner, I think, after a long train journey.
Been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and really enjoyed the book. Congratulations. It was something completely different, you know, wartime thriller mixed in with a bit of cricket. What's not to love? Absolutely fantastic. Tim, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Darren. Really great to talk to you.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Brilliant chat with Tim Brooks. Get your copy of The Batmaker of Copenhagen. Time for some music. This is Wet Leg and Chaise Longue.
Mummy, Daddy, look.
On the shades long.
is Phoenix 98 FM.
And that's Wet Leg and a quirky little track they call Shays Long. Right, just some updates on the football. There's a couple of games going on, which I know people are following. In the Europa League, it's the round of 16. Roma are hosting Brighton and Hove Albion. Roma are 2-0 up at half-time. And at Sparta Prague, they are hosting Liverpool. It's Sparta Prague 0, Liverpool 3. So if you are following your football, that's the latest so far. You listen to Phoenix 98 FM. This is 98 Not Out, the weekly cricket show with me, Darren Mutu. Following me at 7 o'clock, John Chubb is here with the excellent non-league hour. He's here till 8. And then you get Gareth Williams with Bumper to Bumper. That's 3 till 10. He's followed by Madeleine Christie and the Night Shift for country music, old and new. Very, very good stuff.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Right, news, cricket news from around the world. Now, New Zealand have been hosting Australia. Spinner Nathan Lyon took 6 for 65 as Australia wrapped up a 172-run win over New Zealand in the first test in Wellington. It's another 10-wicket haul in the match, the fifth in his career, as well as adding 41 runs as a night watchman, or should that be night hawk these days. The hosts were dismissed for 196 before lunch on day four as Australia went 1-0 up in the two-match series. Stop the two-match series. We want a minimum of three. And the defeat leaves the Black Caps with only one win in 24 tests against their near neighbours this century. The second match in the series starts in Christchurch tomorrow. At the close, India... Oh, sorry, we've done India, haven't we? I'm just seeing the highlights rerunning on the TV screen near to me, and I can't look. Some of the batting there, absolutely ridiculous. Now, sticking with England, spinner Tom Hartley hopes that Nathan Lyon's arrival at Lancashire can be a game-changer for his bowling. Hartley, 24, has had a breakthrough series on England's tour of India, but looks set to be second choice behind Lyon at Lancashire this summer. He's someone I want to try and replicate, Hartley told BBC Sport. To be an international cricketer, you have to be able to perform in different conditions. And Nathan is a guy that can really help me. It's fantastic to see players of that calibre on the county circuit this year. I think Tom Hartley can only learn from having someone like that on a regular basis in the near vicinity. Now, women's cricket, there was something I picked up this week. Shabnam Ismail bowled the fastest recorded delivery in women's cricket in the women's Premier League match between Mumbai Indians and Delhi Capitals. She clocked a ball at 82.1 miles per hour, which is respectable for anyone, but that has now gone down as the fastest ball recorded by a woman in professional cricket. So well done to her. West Indies. It has been announced that the West Indies will play a four-day game against an English first-class Counties 11 at the county ground Beckenham in Kent ahead of the first test against England in July. The match starts on Wednesday, the 3rd of July, and tickets are now on sale for £16 for adults, £7 for 14 to 17-year-olds, and £5 for 5 to 13-year-olds. Under 5s get in for free. You also get in for free if you are a Kent member. Bit of a complicated structure there. You have to take your ID no matter what. Sri Lanka's win over Afghanistan makes them the first team to have test wins against every test-playing country. It's a good record, that one. I'm just going back to Kent. Chief Executive Simon Storey has said that it is unlikely that Tunbridge Wells will host any more county championship matches. Storey said the prospect of men's white ball cricket returning to the Neville Ground remains a possibility. Kent have not played men's first team cricket at the venue since the annual Tunbridge Wells Festival was cancelled in 2020 because of COVID. The county were undefeated there in 10 matches dating back to 2009. The hundreds. Yeah, I've said it, Grumbler, I've said it. Australia stars Meg Lanning and David Warner are among the international players in the 100 draft for 2024. Warner has not previously played in the competition, but Lanning did represent the Trent Rockets in 2022. England players including Ollie Pope, David Milan, Amy Jones and Jason Roy are also involved in the draft, which takes place on the 20th of March. The 100 starts on the 23rd of July with the Oval Invincibles hosting Birmingham Phoenix in a double header. There are 75 places available from the draft process in the men's and women's competitions, with 137 players having already been retained across the 16 teams. The teams that finish bottom of the table in last year's competition will have the first pick. That means Birmingham Phoenix in the women's competition and Northern Superchargers in the men, who this year are led by England legend Andrew Flintoff. A further 16 players, two per team, will be available for selection from the wildcard draft, which takes place shortly before the competition begins. Now, as WG Rumble Pants is counting down on Twitter on a daily basis, there are now just 29 days to the start of the county season. You can smell the freshly cut grass and the mumble of the crowd as well. And there's some news from around the counties. Today, Essex announced that Jamie Porter signed a new contract that keeps him at the club until the end of the 2027 season. That's a long contract. Well done, Jamie, for nailing that down. He spent his entire career at Essex, taking 504 wickets across all formats at an average of 23.53. That's really good news, and Essex fans should be rejoicing at that news. Somerset have announced the signing of Australian international batter Matt Renshaw. The 27-year-old, who enjoyed spells with the club in 2018 and 2022, will be available for the first seven games of the county championship. Renshaw has played 14 tests for Australia, and Somerset said he will bring added experience to the side. Glamorgan have signed Pakistan seam bowler Mir Hamza for the start of the season, while Mason Crane has joined on loan from Hampshire. Left-armer Hamza, 31, has played five tests for Pakistan and impressed for Karachi Kings in this year's Pakistan Super League T20 competition. Crane has made one test and two T20 appearances for England. The leg spinner has not represented his country since 2018 and has not really played regularly for Hampshire recently. So should be good for all parties to see him pulling on the Glamorgan jersey. Now, this is interesting. Warwickshire are set to leave Edgbaston to play three of their four home one-day cup games this summer, 37 miles away at Rugby School. The Bears will host Glamorgan at Edgbaston on Thursday, the 8th of August. However, the games against Surrey on the 2nd of August, Yorkshire on the 11th of August, and Nottinghamshire on the 14th of August will all be played at the 3,000-capacity Rugby School ground. It's the first time in almost a decade that Bears will use an outground. So that's good to see. There's all been a lot of fierce debate about festival cricket. Has it been in decline, which it has been for the last few years? But maybe with this one-day cup taking on a different perspective these days, it's a good chance to take cricket around the counties. And well done, Warwickshire, for doing that. Our friends at Synonymous are presenting the Lord's Long Room Lunch on Tuesday, the 18th of June, in the company of Graham Gooch and Graham Swan. That'll be excellent. Enjoy a three-course lunch with unlimited beer, cider, wine and soft drinks for £229 plus VAT per person. The event supports the Lord's Taverners and the Graham Gooch Scholarship. Visit synonymoussports.com for details or call 01376 741 961. That's 01376 741 961. And just a reminder that the PCA Masters annual fixture is taking place at Brentwood on the 19th of July. It's a Friday at the Old County Ground in Brentwood. It's always a great event. Email events@brentwoodcricketclub.co.uk for full details. Hospitality packages are available. I'd strongly recommend going in the hospitality tent because you'll get up close and personal with all the England boys taking place. The food is great. Someone called Webby does the raffle, which is always entertaining, depending on how many Peronis he's had. But there you go. So email events@brentwoodcricketclub.co.uk for full details. Right, that is it from me for this week. Many thanks for listening. My thanks to my guest, Tim Brooks. Remember to pre-order that book, The Bat Maker of Copenhagen. John Chubb follows me with the non-league hour after this. Gareth here at 8 o'clock. Madeline Christie's here at 10. Keep it locked to Phoenix. Always great stuff. And playing us out tonight, I'm actually going to dedicate this one to John because I know he's a big fan of this lot. We'll be right back.
Does he look so fine up on that hill? They tell me he was lonely, he's lonely still. Those days are gone forever, over a long time ago. Oh yeah.
The man gave me the news. He said, "You must be joking, son. Where did you get those shoes? Where did you get those shoes?"
Well, I seen them on the TV, the movie show. They say the times are changing, but I just don't know. These things are gone.
On the hour across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.